Welcome back to Macabre Mondays, where mystery meets the macabre with your favorite deadly married duo. I'm Ale.
And I'm Tom.
Your guides through the strange, the sinister, and the spooky, where I tell the stories and he gets dragged along for the ride. We're here for part two of the Girl Scout
Freaking finally,
murders.
Man.
I know.
Freaking finally.
They have to wait a week. You have to wait like 2 days.
You're right. But still.
I know. You get very excited.
Wait, no. Why are you telling them the secret?
Oh, yeah. We shouldn't tell them the secret.
Yeah. No. Guys, I definitely wait a full week. Don't hate me. So, shall we get into it? Because
yes.
We really want to get into this.
I know. Now, remember where we last left off,
right?
You were
like, oh, we need something.
Yeah, well, who's going to be the suspect? Yeah. Who's our first guy? All
right,
now we're...
so what the hell going on?
We're jumping right into it, okay? We've got our prime suspect, okay? With the entire state watching and the pressure to find answers mounting, investigators began piecing together what little they had. The footprint, a flashlight, and, you know, that ominous note. But as they scoured the evidence and mapped out possibilities, one name was resurfacing. A name that would quickly become synonymous with this case. Jean Leroy Hart.
Okay.
Hart wasn't some unknown drifter. He was a local, born and raised in the area, and known by many in the small community surrounding Camp Scott. He was a Cherokee man, born and raised in Locust Grove, Oklahoma, just miles from Camp Scott. In his younger years, he was known for his athleticism. He was a talented football player with college scholarship offers, but he ended up turning them all down just to stay close to home and raise a family.
Okay.
And to most in Locust Grove, he was seen as a quiet, spiritual figure. But Hart has a violent past.
Oh.
To investigators, and you'll see why, can be connected to the murders.
Okay, let's get into it.
Now I'm placing another trigger warning. Okay. In 1966, more than a decade before the murders, Hart had been convicted of raping and brutally beating two pregnant women in Tulsa.
Jesus freaking Christ, what the hell?
He bound them with duct tape and electrical cord, blindfolded them using duct tape, and left them to die in the woods.
What's his alibi?
You'll see. Why it makes you think that he has an alibi?
I'm just saying.
Like,
I want to know. Like,
okay,
where was he?
Let me get into it.
Where the fuck were you?
Miraculously, thankfully, they survived. So they were able to get justice. Yes, to an extent. He was sentenced to more than 300 years in prison for the crimes that he committed. But in 1973, while being held in the Mays County Jail, Hart escaped and vanished.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So we don't even know if this guy's got a freaking alibi because he's on the run.
You're like, what is the alibi, my guy? His mother had reportedly smuggled him a metal file inside a Bible.
Can we check books going forward?
They do. Well, now they do because
Better?
Of these things that happened, okay?
Shawshank Redemption, but the man's not innocent. Shit.
He was caught 10 days later.
Oh.
But he escaped again within weeks after that.
Oh, what the hell, man? Yo, this roller coaster of fucking emotion you're taking me on. Jesus Christ.
He remained a fugitive for 4 years, living off the grid, never leaving the general area of Locust Grove either, and almost as if he was untouchable. Authorities suspected that he'd been hiding out in the nearby Cookson Hills, possibly helped by members of the local Cherokee community, who didn't trust law enforcement and believed that Hart had been unfairly targeted. So thus
unfairly
far... You'll see.
Keep going.
We'll get into it, right? Because I thought the same thing. I'm like, why would they think he's unfairly targeted if he was committed of the crimes that he did commit, right? And they're such heinous,
Facts.
Disgusting crimes.
Yeah, like the fuck?
Yeah, so thus far, the authorities believe that the killer had three things, okay? A history of sexual violence, familiarity with the area, and likely had hidden out nearby. Because based off of the facts that we've got, he's got to be close.
We feel like he had been there the night before.
Right.
Or she,
we don't know yet, right? And Leroy had all three of those, right? So it's also important to mention that his mother and where he grew up, she lived not that far from Camp Scott. So the bubble up top, that's where his mother lived, where the red line is.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
then the one at the bottom, that's where Camp Scott is. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So this is so this camp's literally surrounded by roads.
Yes.
In all directions.
In all different directions. And it's also like a 410-acre campsite. So it's big. The items found near the crime scene clearly mirror his previous MO that he did with the two pregnant women, right? He bound them.
Left them in the woods.
Yep. He sexually assaulted. He raped them.
Yeah.
And he, you know, all that. And gagged them and stuff like that. So there is a lot of the similarities that also happened to the...
It matches his MO.
To the three young girls. Correct. The most significant break came when they were searching the woods. There were three nearby cave sites. In the days after the murders, police searched a series of caves located within walking distance of Camp Scott. Inside, they found newspaper clippings, duct tape, pieces of rope, a pair of glasses and a mirror matching those stolen from the counselors, spray-painted graffiti on the cave that said, "The killer was here, bye-bye fools."
What the fuck?
And two photographs of a random woman's wedding photo.
This is weird as hell.
You're like, what the hell?
Like, what the
Wait till
fuck?
I know. I knew you were going to be like, what in the world is even all this?
Like, this literally gives me, and if anybody asked you, it was the Clydesdale brothers that committed this robbery. Like, this is what this is giving
I know,
me.
That's what's giving. Okay. Now, you're probably wondering, out of a lot of the what's, the two photographs of the random women's
like, who the fuck is that? Why the yes. What?
Authorities trace the photos found in the cave. Okay, so there's three caves that they like searched by
close by.
But this one cave is actually closer to where the direction of his mother's house is.
Okay.
And also where they found all the items. Okay. Authorities trace the photos that were found in the cave to the photo lab of the state prison where Hart had once worked on a prison work release program that they offered to the inmates as a photo assistant. So you know how they have jobs?
Yeah.
Photo assistant was one. And of course, people have to ruin it because that's how he got the photos. So that's how they tied the photos and the cave itself back to Hart.
That's so weird. It's also given me, what was the movie that we watched recently where it was the two cops? It was the one girl and the other cop, and they showed up to the person's house, and then the guy ended up, he was like a sniper or some shit.
Are you talking about Sicario?
No, not that one. It was, they were at a house in the middle of nowhere. I want to say the one cop was like he was an older detective or some shit.
Oh, you're talking about Daddy Long Legs.
No. No, we literally like just watched it, and the mom was there, and they were like, "Look, like, where's your son? He's committed so many murders. He's a sharpshooter." And then all of a sudden, the woman cop looked out at the shed and saw like a glint and was like, "Do not move." And then all of a sudden, the male cop got like shot and killed.
Yo, did I fall asleep? I don't recall this movie at all.
No, this was an intense movie. All right, I'll figure it out after.
Okay, let me know. So at this point, the dots are beginning to connect, right? I mean, fingers are pointing now. Many believe that he used the cave to hide out, or worse, maybe it was like his trophy den or some sort.
Yeah, something psycho
shit, yeah. Seeing as he was on the run, these definitely were probably places he must have been frequenting and hiding, because he's been on the run for 4 years now.
Yeah.
And he's been staying close to home.
Yeah, which is also, I mean, if you're close to home, maybe his mom delivered some food to his little
cave.
Could be.
Maybe he lives in the
cave.
Here
you go, Sasquatch.
Many believe...
Sorry, didn't mean to crack you up. Also, the movie was To Catch a Killer.
With this evidence, the manhunt for Gene Leroy Hart became a full-blown statewide pursuit. We're talking the biggest manhunt search in the history of Oklahoma, which...
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Like, nothing... I feel like I never hear anything happening there.
Yeah, no, for real. And sorry to our Oklahomians if we did or not, but we don't know anything about Oklahoma, really. So you can only imagine the biggest manhunt going on there, okay? Which also is going to entail search dogs. Now, the reason why I mentioned search dogs, you'll see why. Because Hart's status as a fugitive kind of turned him into something of a myth in Locust Grove, okay? Some believe that native spirits or the native land was protecting him because of how long he was evading the authorities. Rumors even circulated that he had put a curse on two search dogs because two search dogs actually reportedly died mysteriously.
What the hell?
Yep, during the manhunt.
Yo, this some like Black Widow, Black Witchcraft. What is it called?
Well,
Black,
he's a Native American.
Black
so,
magic shit.
Yeah, I don't know what you would call that, but obviously.
I don't know.
You're using.
I'm running with black magic.
Now, I know you were like, why? Remember her earlier? We were like, why would they think that he's being targeted?
Yeah.
Right. Where is that coming from? If he did commit horrendous acts and heinous acts. Now, there was a lot of tension between investigators and the local Cherokee community. For many indigenous families, trust in the justice system had already been broken long before 1977. This area, Locust Grove and the surrounding hills, wasn't just quiet country land. It's part of the Cherokee Nation, land that holds deep history and meaning. Now, back in the 1830s, I did not know this, but thousands of Cherokee people were forcibly removed from their homes in the southeastern United States by the U.S. government.
Oh, shit.
They were made to walk over 1,000 miles through cold, hunger, and disease to what was called Indian Territory, which is now Oklahoma.
Huh.
I did not know that. Yeah, it was very interesting to learn
that.
That
would make sense then why there wasn't so many Native Americans on the East Coast
anymore.
They
yeah.
all got kind of pushed in.
They pretty much were, their homes were taken over, their land was taken. So that journey became known as the Trail of Tears. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes, actually.
I have not, which I thought was crazy.
I think there's a movie even on it.
There could be. There most likely is. I was looking up some photos on it, and it was so heartbreaking that that's even... It just... Ugh, what a dark history. But because they called it Trail of Tears because of how many lives were lost along the way, entire families died. It was extremely cruel. It was violent. And it's clearly a wound that's never really
going
to
heal. Yeah. No.
And after that, the Cherokee pretty much rebuilt there in Locust Grove. So they created communities, they opened schools, and reestablished their government. So that history still lives in the people and in the land. So when Hart, a Cherokee man, yeah, with the dark past that yeah. he has, but also the deep roots in the community, he was being accused. People didn't just see a suspect. They saw, okay, this is a system that they learned not to trust because, you know,
everything that happened to
before,
them.
Right? So they're probably
sense.
Targeting
that makes
him.
Sense.
Yeah. And some believe that Hart was just being kind of railroaded, that he'd become just this convenient scapegoat in this case that the public is so desperately wanting to solve. And putting a killer to the three girls. And we've seen this before in other cases that where people were...
Targeted?
Framed? Yes. We've seen this before in other cases that where people are framed just because they really... There's no concrete evidence, but
you're
the best suspect and they yeah. need to close the case because there's so many strings attached to things. So that's what they, you know... And the problem with this, right, is that with... There's a lot of messiness... With the evidence, the problem with this is how messy some of the evidence handling was. So that's, and I'm going to get more into it. So you'll start connecting the dots more. Like I see where people are thinking here, and you can understand why doubts took hold and why no one was talking, because no one's talking to the authorities. They probably know within the community where he is, but they're not going to say anything.
No, because they're going to protect him because they don't trust them.
They don't trust them. And they're going to be like, wow, why would we give him up? And they're pretty much concerned with he shouldn't be looked at just because he committed these heinous crimes, even though like he did commit yeah. those crimes and they are very close to the three girls. He should still be looked at. But yeah. this is just how they thought about. Now, two Native American investigators on the police force were said to have gone undercover, integrating themselves into local circles around the community to see what they could learn and find out. And after that, it was actually rumored that he was hiding with a local medicine man. And 10 months after the murder, authorities finally tracked him to a remote cabin near Cookson Hills.
Okay.
Now, the Cookson Hills sit out in eastern Oklahoma, okay? And the only reason why I'm going to mention Cookson Hills is because it's into the edge of the Ozark Plateau. Okay, now this is a wild, rugged place, okay? It's full of thick woods, steep ridges, and winding valleys. And back in the early 1900s, it was actually a known hideout for outlaws.
Huh.
One of the most famous outlaws. Have you ever heard of Charles Arthur Pretty Boy Floyd?
Yes.
Well, he was some kind of a Robin Hood figure. He would rob banks. He would tear up mortgage papers, which, good for you.
Hey.
Boy.
Can you come back?
Can you tear ours up? And disappearing back into the hills before anyone could catch him. And it wasn't just Pretty Boy Floyd running around these hills, okay? Bonnie and Clyde made their way through the Oklahoma too.
No shit.
Yep. So yeah, the Cookson Hills wasn't just this like scenic mountainous area. This just was the kind of terrain that was perfect if you don't want to be found.
Perfect for criminals.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't want to be found. And so this is pretty much where they found him. On April 6th of 1978, Hart was captured at a remote cabin near Cookson Hills, staying with the local medicine man. When they found him, he was very calm, he was very compliant, and very quiet. He allegedly told the medicine man, because he came up in the news, and he said that Hart told him, "I know what happened, but I didn't do it."
Interesting.
When he was arrested, Hart didn't resist. He didn't confess. He simply just went with the officers. But even in custody, the case against him would prove to be anything but straightforward. Okay, now by the time Gene Leroy Hart was brought in to stand trial, nearly 2 years had passed since the terrible night at Camp Scott.
Holy shit.
The case had grown beyond Oklahoma, okay? At this point, we're talking national news outlets covered every update. And the pressure was even more intense, if you can think about it. In March of 1979, Hart's trial began in Mays County, where the crime was committed, okay? The community was very divided because tensions were running real high.
Yeah, I'm sure, between both sides.
Right. And I mean, you could tell, because many locals, especially in the Native American community, which made up a lot of the residents there, believed that Leroy was being framed or unfairly targeted because of his race and his past and all that.
Makes complete sense.
And it's also sad, too, because the families of the girls are also going through it. They're like, they weren't really seen as with much sympathy because a lot of more people were looking at sympathy for him, which I was like shocked to hear that, because I'm like, he's still a bad guy.
Yeah.
Like, what? And these...
I mean, it seems like it's
girls.
Just also kind of the demographic they had there was
so
a little bit
sad.
More supportive.
Yeah.
You know,
and
that's wild.
It's crazy because Lori's dad actually talks in an interview and he tells her, and he says they were pretty much looked at as outsiders, you know, like from the Tulsa area. Like, you're not even from here, even though they are from here.
Yeah,
right.
But
and
they're
so,
not Native American.
Right. And that's what made up most of the community, which, I mean, it's just terrible. Because they're the ones going through this right now. And I get where they're also coming from. But I don't know. It was just, I just thought it was crazy because they were having sympathy for him.
It's a mix of a lot of emotions.
Yeah. It's like they were having more sympathy for Hart instead of for the three girls. Now, the idea of him being framed by law enforcement, particularly Sheriff Pete Weaver, the lead investigator, people believed that he had a vendetta against Hart. Weaver, who had arrested Hart years earlier in the 1966 rapes, he reportedly believed that Hart was evil and was trying to push Hart just to convict him again. Okay, so people were saying,
so there's
that's
already,
what he was doing.
Yeah, there's already
right.
almost they have the evidence against Hart, but then the community has this evidence that they feel like they have against the sheriff.
Exactly. And we'll get into the evidence too, because once I start talking about that, you're going to be like, we'll get into it. But they also believed that the reason why Weaver was going so hard at Hart was because he made him look like a fool because he escaped his prison twice, which...
Completely understand that, too.
Yeah, but I also feel like I don't know. I feel they are... It's rough because I'm like, there's three innocent, beautiful, sweet girls that had their life ahead of them. And the last thing I think they're... also worried about is just convicting anybody and anyone, especially when they're going towards the evidence. But
they want to figure out who did it.
Right. And right. Exactly. Now, protesters gathered in support of Hart, claiming that he was a scapegoat and that the real killer had never been properly investigated or searched for. And by this point, Hart had already been returned to prison. So when they found him, it's not like he goes to jail. He could pay bail and then he can leave.
Yeah, because he escaped. He was supposed to be in prison still.
Exactly. So they actually returned him back to prison to serve out the remainder of his 300 plus year sentence for his prior rape and kidnapping convictions. But now he was being tried for the murders of Lori, Michelle, and Denise. Prosecutors presented what they believed was a compelling case, okay? The items found in the cave, his violent criminal history, and his escape from prison. I mean, check, 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 mark, mark, mark.
Everything's, yeah.
Right. They leaned heavily, though, on circumstantial evidence, trying to paint a picture of a man with motive, means, and opportunity. Again, we don't have any real, there's really nothing concrete connecting us to him other than the photos, but that doesn't really tell us if he was anything. There that night. Yeah. So everything is really circumstantial evidence at this point. But here's the thing, okay? Remember, there's no real fingerprint comparison. There's no eyewitnesses. And back then, the DNA testing wasn't what it is today. So
there's nothing really to go off of.
Nothing that can really convict them. But they're trying to build a story of...
Like the concrete evidence that we can do today is just... It's not there.
Right. What little biological evidence they had was the semen and the hair samples from the scene, right? But that still couldn't definitively prove that Hart was the killer because the forensic analysis even said that they were similar in type to Hart's, but that's, again, not concrete Hart evidence or a match, right? 100% match because... So the photos found in the cave did trace back to Hart's time working in the prison lab, and his past crimes, especially the similar MO of binding and assaulting women in remote wooded areas, you know, that's kind of what they're going
off
of.
With,
right.
Yeah.
Sid Wise was the prosecutor on the case. Now, I'm going to start mentioning certain things of why people thought they couldn't trust the system. And they were, because there was a lot of things that were going on. We're going to talk about the defense's strategy and the evidence and all that. OK, now Sid Wise was the prosecutor on the case. Controversially, it was revealed that Sid had allegedly shared confidential files with someone writing a book about the case during the trial.
What an idiot.
I know. Now, this clearly, I mean, like I said, undermines the public trust, and now it's casting a shadow over the...
And they already don't trust you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay. Now, obviously, this is what... Leroy's lawyer is going to touch upon.
Of course.
And also Leroy's lawyer was also a Native American. So it's running deep here, right? And another thing that they also did was that they actually opened up they actually welcomed the media to allow them to interview Hart during this was all happening and ask him questions. But the questions had to be filtered through, obviously, the lawyers and such. So he's actually doing an interview. People are asking him questions. And they're not even questions about the case.
They're just...
They're like random stuff.
What the hell?
Do you feel... I don't know. Like, how do you feel about the economy? I forgot what the questions were because that's how...
That's so freaking random and weird.
Yeah.
Like, why... What?
And he was saying, like, I'm not trying to be a hero and yada yada, because people are looking at him sort of like that because they're like, well, he's being falsely accused.
Oh, my God.
Yada yada and framed. And I'm like, are you kidding me? He's still on trial for... We'll get into it.
Anyways.
Because the only reason why I'm getting off is because I know a lot more yet. Okay. Now, one of the biggest criticisms came when it was revealed that some evidence had been collected during the initial investigation, but was later presented as if it had been found in the cave.
Okay.
Including the pair of glasses. Now, remember when I said we'll talk about the mishandling of evidence earlier? Okay. Well, one of the prosecution's biggest piece of evidence was the pair of sunglasses. You know, they said they found it in the cave near Hart's mother's home, the cave closest to her house, you know, linking him directly to the crime scene. But here's where things get a little messy. It turned out that the same sunglasses had already been logged earlier at the original crime scene near Tent 7. They weren't from the cave at all. Now, that mistake or misrepresentation gave the defense something
more strength, more doubt
because that's what they need to do. They just
all
need
they gotta do is get the jury to be
I can't rule it without doubt, like, yeah. And with this case, since there's no direct DNA or eyewitness, doubt is all that they need. Now, the defense used this to argue that the investigators were planting or reframing and doing all this with the evidence, which hence is what plays into this. Now, the trial lasted a total of 12 days. The courtroom was packed. Okay. Now, anybody can go to the courtroom if you want to, even if there's a hearing going on by us or a trial or whatever.
Johnny Depp.
You can walk right in there and watch. So the courtroom was packed, okay, day after day with reporters, with family members and locals that were divided in opinion. But then came the verdict, okay? On March 30th of 1979, after just 5 hours of deliberation, the families, Lori's family, Denise and Michelle's family, they were all pretty much saying that Lori said that she pretty much expected that the deliberation was going to take a while. Yeah. Like a couple of days at least.
It sounds like with how everything was split, the evidence and everything, it sounds like it should have.
Exactly. But only 5 hours of deliberation, the jury returned with their verdict. Not guilty on all accounts.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yep. They found him not guilty. Jean Leroy Hart was acquitted of the murders of Lori Lee Farmer, Michelle Heather Gousset, and Doris Denise Milner. Now, for the families, it's a devastating blow because the fuck, right? They've already been waiting 2 years for justice only to watch the accused pretty much walk free on those charges.
On
those charges.
Jesus Christ.
And it's sad because Lori's mom, Sherry, she talks about the verdict in like an interview. And she said that afterwards they stopped by the cemetery and she said that she promised Lori that they were going to, you know, continue the search for justice. And that they were going to do something positive in her memory and that they were sorry that they failed because, you know.
Yeah, like.
It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. And it's sad because Denise Milner's mom, she was talking about how during this time, like she couldn't really talk to anybody because everyone she would talk to, like family members or friends, they would start crying because of how sad it was. So it's like she didn't really have an outlet to be able to express because everyone else was also really sad about it. And if she mentioned it, then it would make them sad and then she didn't want to do that. And
sucks, so man.
It's just such a freaking sad situation.
Well, it's also, you just want closure.
Yeah.
And now these people have been robbed of what the potential closure was.
Right.
Again, obviously.
And the only answer that they're
he's not guilty.
Right.
So we don't know for sure.
Right.
But shit, dude.
But that just shows you that the defense built a really strong case on doubt because that's all they had to do. And the verdict in itself shocked the whole town. I mean, it shocked the entire state. The three little girls have been brutally murdered, and the man that they most believed was responsible is literally just walking free from those charges. And that's it. There's nothing they can do about it because he's acquitted now.
Yep.
Now, what happens next? Okay. Hart's freedom, obviously.
There's more?
Mm-hmm. There sure are.
Well, I was going to actually ask, we're in the 21st century now. Is he still alive? Are they able to do DNA testing now?
Good questions. Very good questions that I will all answer. Very good. So,
let's go.
Hart's freedom was short-lived because remember that he had escaped prison?
Yeah, he wasn't even supposed to be out. 300 years, buddy. Get back in.
Yeah. Well, he's still required to serve the rest of his original sentence for...
You don't fucking say. They were going to return him to his little cave.
Pretty much, because after the trial, he was returned back to prison.
Different type of a cave, buddy.
Still a cave, though.
Still
hope you
cold.
Like it.
Still full of concrete and rock.
Still wet. Yep. Well, just 2 months later, on June 4th of 1979, what do you think happened?
He escaped again.
Nope. He collapsed and died while exercising in the prison yard.
He was like, you know what? I can feel a heart attack coming on.
Well, funny you say that because he did die of a massive heart attack.
This motherfucker.
And it's likely...
Fucking choosing the easy way out, you piece of shit.
It's likely from an undiagnosed coronary disease, and he was 35 when it happened. And a lot of the community...
Damn, he was only 35 when he died?
Only 35, yep. And a lot of the community...
Yo, you still had like 290 years left.
You're like, you barely scraped the surface, sweetie. Get your ass back in the cave. A lot of the community thought that he was poisoned because they were like, wow,
oh God,
what are the chances? Yeah,
go.
They killed him, yada, yada. But there was an autopsy performed, and it did confirm that he did die from heart disease. Like, he did have a heart disease.
Yep.
I think I forgot where I saw that. One of the arteries were super clogged or whatnot.
I mean, will say, I feel like back at this time too,
it was just a
lot understanding of the heart and everything wasn't really
all great. Yeah, true, very true though. Now, after Leroy Hart died in 1979, it might have seemed like the case had closed. Okay, like you said.
But
for the families of Lori, Michelle, and Denise, there was no closure, right? Just a haunting absence and a courtroom verdict that left more questions than answers. For years, the case remained officially unsolved, but never forgotten. The grief didn't stop with the verdict. Denise Milner's mother, Betty, became active in victim support advocacy and would often speak publicly about her daughter. Lori Lee Farmer's mother and father helped found the Oklahoma Crime Victims Compensation Board, which still provides support to families and victims till this day. And Richard Gousset, which was Michelle's father, channeled his grief into advocacy as well. Oklahoma Victims Bill of Rights, he played a pivotal role in helping the state legislature pass this bill, ensuring better protection and rights for victims and their families, and the Oklahoma Crime Victims Compensation Board.
Oh, that's awesome.
I know, absolutely awesome. And I mean, what a great testament to their memory, to the sweet girls' memories, because the things that they would have became if they had the chance to, and nobody robbed them of their life. Over time, the families worked with law enforcement and researchers to revisit this case and make sure that their daughters were never forgotten. One of Lori Farmer's childhood friends, Cheryl Stokes, she actually lived in the street behind Lori when she was still alive.
Okay.
Eventually went on to work for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Holy shit.
She later reached out to Lori's mom, Sherry, and said, "I lived with the hope of one day helping your family find the answers." And that connection helped reignite forensic testing in this case.
All right, stop holding me. What happened next? Hostage. What's next?
Well, as technology advanced over the years, yada, 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 yada. No.
Oh, my God. The people listening want the answer.
So did the possibility of finally getting real answers.
Yeah,
in the
1980s
and 90s, early forms of DNA testing were attempted.
We get it. We get it. We've made advancements. Damn, woman.
Well, in 2013, a new forensic review of the case began. Investigator Andrea Fielding led a deep dive into the hundreds of pieces of evidence collected, more than 400 items total. Shockingly, she discovered that only one item at the time had ever been submitted for DNA testing.
Holy shit.
In the original investigation, which is insane.
That's fucking wild.
That is insane. She even talks about it in the interviews that you never just test one piece. Yeah, and she says that I'll never understand why that was done the way that it was, because that just doesn't make any sense. Now, with the advancement of the 21st century forensic tools that we have, authorities began reanalyzing evidence, starting with the items found closest to the bodies and expanding outwards, okay? Among those items were the hairs found on the 10th floor, sealed evidence bag with the body fluids and fibers, flashlight fingerprint smudge, and semen samples, okay? Now, in 2017, 40 years after the murders, new testing was performed on preserved evidence using modern DNA technology. Mays County Sheriff Mike Reed, who had personally committed years to revisiting this cold case, announced that the results were a partial DNA match to Jean Leroy Hart.
Holy fuck, we got him.
Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because they all said, all the investigators, and after the DNA testing or whatnot, I mean, it's a partial DNA match, but it's a match.
But it's a match. It's right? A fucking match. You had to have been there for a fucking match.
For a match. They all said potential persons of interest were all excluded except one, Jean Leroy Hart.
Wow.
One of the strangest and most telling pieces of evidence left at the scene was the red flashlight that you saw, right? Which, again, I'll post everything on
social.
Which
had the smudged fingerprint.
Yes. But remember, this wasn't just a regular flashlight. It was tampered with. You know, it had the trash bag wrapped with the tape in a tiny hole.
It had little pieces of newspaper to hold the batteries.
One of the most damning pieces of evidence didn't come from the DNA or the fingerprints. It actually came from a torn piece of tape. Investigators compared the tape used to dim the flashlight at the crime scene with another piece of tape found in a cave near where Hart's childhood home was, where his mom's home was. And when they laid the two next to each other, the two pieces.
Holy shit.
Yep, the tear patterns matched. A jigsaw puzzle, no joke. And I'll post this. Yeah, identical. So you could tell they came from the same place, right? Very identical. That same cave also held the newspaper clippings about the murders and stolen items from Camp Scott, remember?
Yeah.
Now, the newspaper matched the piece found inside the flashlight.
Damn.
Because there was a little piece torn in there.
That was holding everything.
Both were from the same edition of the Tulsa World newspaper dated April 17th of 1977. I'm going to post the photos as usual, everybody, so you can see them side by side. But the tape one, it looks identical.
There's no doubt about it that is the exact same. It's damn near impossible. If somebody actually ripped it and took the time to get it that perfect.
Right.
Impossible.
Right.
Impossible.
And then with the partial DNA match and then all these little clues, it just points you at it, right? And based off of that new DNA result, the partial match, the problem is that it's not conclusive enough to legally reopen the case or secure a conviction after his death, right? It's still partial.
But it at least gives.
But it's enough match to strengthen, right? What already so many believe that Hart was in all likelihood the real killer.
Yeah. I feel like if I was the family and the cops came out and said this,
I'd be like,
I would be like, all right, cool. Yeah. I mean, he can't get convicted.
Right.
Even if they reopen the case.
I mean, they could smear his name. Like he could be legally
held liable for it.
Right.
But I think personally for me,
this would be
wouldn't need that. I would at least need the closure just knowing that we had the right killer.
Right.
And
right.
we knew the person that we had put up at stand and everything, that was who killed my kid.
Yeah.
That is all I think I would need.
Very true, though. Very true. Well, Sheriff Reed later actually stated publicly that based on everything, the evidence, the location, the timeline, and now that partial DNA match, he was confident that Hart was responsible.
Yeah, that's good.
To this day, some argue that the investigation was flawed from the beginning still, that the evidence may have been mishandled, and that Hart, despite his criminal past, might have been an easy scapegoat. But others have speculated whether someone else could have been involved, honestly, because he had a couple hours of, it was 11 to 6.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I just,
some people think it could be, I just don't.
So what happened to Camp Scott? Is it still open?
Well, Camp Scott was evacuated immediately after the murders, of course, and they actually never reopened after 1977. They were open since 1928. Yeah.
Damn, that kind of sucks, dude.
Yeah, it sucks. And they ended up permanently closing, and over time, the site just kind of fell in. They didn't repair anything.
I mean, I can
anything.
Also imagine.
Yeah.
Because think about it as a kid, if you're going to camp there and you know that years prior there was a murder.
It's a horrific. And like, it's horrific. And it's crazy because there are still old remnants of the old tent platforms. And there's like a few rotting structures. And I mean, what else the trees probably are holding? Because
that's wild.
No, it's insane. The property was actually later sold off to a local family, like later down the line, which is insane. But I mean, this is the case that changed Oklahoma, because after the murders, Oklahoma wasn't the same. People started locking their doors. I mean, kids were no longer sent to sleepaway camps without hesitation. Communities lost a sense of innocence that they didn't even know that they had. And this case clearly just reshaped how people were parenting, how people were policing, how people were trusting other people and where their kids were going and what they were doing. So imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine, again, if I was getting ready to send my kid off and then this happens the year prior or 2 years prior, I can only imagine how I'm going to feel.
Right.
I'm not going to want to send my kid away.
Well,
unless I'm there too.
Right. And so many other podcasts have covered this case. Please go check them out too, because they're great. And a lot of them are also mothers, and they talk about how hard this case is because of the fact that they also have kids and they can't even imagine. And a lot of the times, obviously, when you have kids, you got to let them grow, you gotta let them go do things, and you know, and with how life is now, I mean, after the movie theater massacre too, there's school massacres,
dude, everything,
like no joke, at the grocery store, at the church, at the local mall, like everywhere, at the park,
nowhere was truly ever safe,
right.
It just feels, no matter where you are though now, it's even more, you know,
and I can't even, I just can't even, I can't even imagine, that's just, I don't know. That's just tough. And but to this day, the case is still open and technically unsolved. And because even though with the DNA evidence pointing that it was Hart, the case remains technically open because the DNA file is only partial. Yeah, it's only partial. Yep, and in the eyes of the law, it's strongly suggestive that he is the killer, but it's not
that they can't prove concrete
without reasonable doubt. Yeah. Correct, exactly. So,
But we know, exactly.
In the eyes of the investigators, they also believe that the case is closed.
The listeners, everyone that's watched this case, they know.
Yeah, fuck you, Gene Leroy, dart, fart, idiot. Fucking hate stupid.
Anyways,
but honestly, that's what makes this story so tragic, because even with all that evidence and the stories and the myths and the years of searching, there's still that ache of tiny unanswered space that, you know, justice isn't really going to quite fill always. And that's what kills me, because yeah, I do believe it, but like you said, I mean, it's some of the closure. I mean, and they talk about it in the interviews, like the families, like they talk about closure. They don't really know what that is, because I mean, at the end of the day, yeah. And it's sad, because Lori's mom actually said, and it made me tear up, because she said it took her a long time to be able to say out loud that her daughter was murdered. And then after that, it took her an even longer time to say that she was raped, because that's what happened. Imagine. Yep, that's what happened. And it sucks. I mean, it's so freaking sad. It breaks my heart. I mean, I was crying researching it. It's just, I mean, three beautiful girls that did not deserve that.
No.
I mean, no one deserves that.
Michelle would have been out there planting flowers to this day.
Are you kidding me? Hell yeah. They would have. It's crazy, because in Lori's letter, she was talking about how excited she was that she met these two girls and she was going to be sleeping.
They definitely would have grown up to be friends.
They were just girls. They were just girls.
And they were also all just starting their fucking life.
Yes. And I know. I mean, 8, 9, and 10. Are you kidding me? Rot in hell for anybody who harms kids, who harms animals. I mean, just don't fucking harm anybody. Just harm yourself. But yeah, like, I'm just like don't, ugh. Ugh, ugh.
There's nasty, disgusting, terrible fucking people out there.
Oh, disgusting.
And it just doesn't make fucking sense.
No, they're just like loser, loners, low lives, got nothing else to do with their life. You know, what can you do? Some people just miserable. Misery loves company. Now, there's tons of books and documentaries that are out there about the Girl Scout murders. One of the most recent ones that I'm going to mention is the documentaries. Is Keeper of the Ashes, the Oklahoma Girl Scout murders. Now, it's not bad. I'd still say it's worth a watch, okay? But do you know the actress and singer Kristen Chenoweth?
Yeah.
I added a photo, too, so you can check out to see who she was.
Yeah,
she, lately, I feel like I see her in more movies, like Hallmark-style movies.
Four Christmases.
She was in Four Christmases, which is one of my favorite Christmas movies.
We love that shit.
And the two new ones that we saw with Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Our Little Secret, and the other one, Holiday.
Yes.
Okay, love those. Those were so great. They were on Netflix. She's also the OG Good Witch from Wicked. The Broadway show.
Yes.
Yeah, that's who she is. So she's this American actress and singer. And the reason why I'm mentioning her is because when they advertised and marketed this documentary that came out, she was on it very much. And the connection that she has with this, and the only connection that I saw was that to the case, she actually lived in Oklahoma in this area around that time. And she was supposed to go to Camp Scott that summer.
Damn.
At the same time that the murders took place. But last minute, she got sick and her parents didn't let her go. So that's the connection.
That's actually insane. Yeah.
But when I was watching the documentary, I don't really know why she was in it per se, just because she didn't really know them either. She said that she had seen Michelle in school and that they would pass each other, but they weren't, like, she wasn't really friends with the other girls. I think her connection was just that she was from Oklahoma. She almost did go. She's also this American actress.
It was probably the documentary team was like, hey, there's a celebrity almost went to this, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, it was sweet. She did get a lot of hate on internet that I saw while I was researching, because they were like, what is she, like, she's just like, every time I see her, she's singing. Yeah, but it was kind of endearing, because just hearing certain things that she did say, it's still worth the watch. Go watch it. They have a lot of interviews with family and the investigators and friends and all that. So it is very informational as well. But the endearing part was at the end which is another reason why I was crying the other day, because she sang a song about friendships and love and stuff like that they made. She was with another singer on there, and she's singing it for Lori, Michelle, and Denise. Yeah. And so that really touched me, because I was like, man. And they had photos of the girls, and Oh, I can't. It was a very nice tribute, but still worth a watch. Definitely go check it out. The only reason why I think she's really on is because they were marketing her.
Yeah.
Pretty much, but yeah. And one of the other things in the documentary that killed me was the fact that in the documentary, towards the end, she goes with the new sheriff, Sheriff Mike. She goes with him to the site of where it happened.
Really?
And he says he'll still go by, like he'll pass by at times just to look out and really reminisce and just kind of pay tribute to them. But they go to the site and that's that tree that they were actually found died. Like damn. Half of it is like dead, which dead? Is, yeah, it's a dead tree. It's a dead tree.
That's wild.
Yeah. And they were kind of talking about the symbolism of it and too, in the fact that these trees are here for, I mean, if you think about it, they're here for decades.
Years
I mean,
centuries, and
centuries
years.
And centuries. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And for this, like what a, it's just, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
It was tough. It is very tough if you guys go watch the documentary, just because these are three little girls. Oh my God. They're the sweetest, cutest things in the world. They did not deserve that. And to see what ended up happening to them is so sad. So yeah, what you thought about the Girl Scout murder? Sorry. I know. I'm so sorry to all our listeners too. To all our listeners out in the UK. And to our new listeners too. I'm so sorry. It's rough.
It's a hefty damn case.
I know. But it was hefty.
I also like how it ended.
Yeah.
I mean, you've
got some closure.
I feel like it's the best that you can get.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and
out of the situation. Yeah. And I think too, I mean, imagine all those other cases that every time I leave you off with well, unsolved. Well, we have no idea.
Yeah, you know how much the listeners and I don't like that?
Yeah. I'm sorry guys. My bad.
Can you solve the damn case before you bring it to us?
Thank you for joining us today on Macabre Mondays. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you know more about today's episode or caught a detail we might have missed, let us know.
Hey, it's your boy Tom. You know what I'm about to say. If you have a story that is strange, sinister, downright spooky, doesn't matter how small you may think it is, send it our freaking way. We finally are getting some coming in. We've been loving
them. Yes.
I'm excited to be able to hear them. Ali's just kind of teasing them left and right that we're going to do something soon.
We should be doing something this month.
So, send some shit in. You can email us at macabremondayspodcast@gmail.com or head over to macabremondays.com to submit your story. Yours just might be featured in an upcoming listener episode.
Follow us on social media by searching Macabre Mondays for photos of today's episode, updates, and a little extra spooky fun. We'll see you next Monday for another sinister, strange, and spooky episode. Stay tuned. More mysteries just around the corner. But until then, stay curious and stay safe. Bye, everyone.
Deuces.